Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph, seven lines down. Just to review quickly, because the Gemara is going to ask a number of questions on the sheet of Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai said in the Braita of Toah that she has to go to the mikveh 95 times. That is premised, as we already noted, on the fact that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel both believe that Tvila Bizmana is a mitzvah. You need to try as best as possible to go to the mikveh when you need to go to the mikveh, which is at the end of whatever Tara process you're going through. You need to go to the mikveh at that time. And going to the mikveh at that time is a mitzvah. So therefore, they try to maximize the number of times that you can go to the mikveh and then meet that endpoint where you would need to go to the mikveh. As already noted in yesterday's daf, there are a number of reasons to go to the mikveh. One of which is because you've completed either by a zachar the first 7 days of Tumah or by nekeva the first 14 days of Tumah. You go to the mikveh on that night, that makes you into a tvulat yom aroch, makes you into a tvulat yom, which usually means you went to the mikveh on the day and you're waiting for the sun to set on that same day. By the case of Leida, the sun setting on the 40th day or the 80th day becomes the Herev Shemesh. That's why it's called a tvulat yom aroch, because she goes to the mikveh after the 7th day and then waits to the 40th day for the sun to set in order for her to be muteret b'truma. From the time she goes to the mikveh, she's already muteret to her husband. And the same is true by nekeva. After 14 days, you go to the mikveh at night, and then you would become tehora at the 80th day. Beit Shammai is of the view that on that 40th day and that 80th day, you need to go to the mikveh again that night. So they require a mikveh twice, once at the end of the Yimei Tumah, and once at the end of the Yimei Tahara. So that is what brings on the additional tefillot that are required by Beit Shammai. And in addition to that, we have other tefillot that we know that a woman might have. One is for Nida, the end of the 7 days of Nida. No matter how many riyot she's had during that 7 day period of her Nida, the end of the 7th day, that night, she can go to the mikveh and become Torah, as long as she stops sighting. And then we had for Zava Gdola, which is after 7 days, Shiva Nikiim, on the 7th day. During the day, she goes to the mikveh and then becomes Torah at the end of that day when the sun sets. Invoke the principle of Mixat Ayom Kikulo, and therefore when she goes to the mikveh on that day, she should be Torah already. Although Rabbi Shimon has a warning about that, which is what the Bright supposedly subscribes to, that we don't want her being together with her husband on the 7th day after she goes to the mikveh, because there's a risk that if she has a sighting on that 7th day after she goes to the mikveh, it'll undermine the whole Shiva Nikiim, as if she never went to the mikveh. So we wait until sunset to be certain that she is Torah. So in order to get to the 95 tefillot, we said, and the woman comes before us, Ben Hashmashot, on that first day. And so Ben Hashmashot, right as she appears for us, she goes to the mikveh that night, because the possibility that that night is the end of something. We don't know what it is. It could be the end of the 7 days of Tumah for a Zachar, it could be the end of 14 days for a Nekeva, it could be the end of the 40th day for a Zachar, end of the 80th day for a Nekeva. Any of those could precipitate the need to go to the mikveh on that first night when she appears before that. Every subsequent night for the first 7 days, she needs to go to the mikveh because maybe she was yuledet zachar. Maybe right before she came before us, she miscarried or gave birth to a zachar, and therefore she has 7 days of tumah. Those 7 days of tumah could terminate anywhere during that first week. Therefore she goes to the mikveh at night every day during that week. In the second week, she goes to the mikveh every day at night as well, because then that could be the termination of a nekeva. Nekeva, 14 days for Tuma. So anywhere during that second week, it could be the end of her 14 days of giving birth to a nekeva. Therefore, she goes to the mikveh at night, every night. During that second week, she also goes to the mikveh every day during the day. And that is because there's a possibility she was a yoledet zachar bezov. She gave birth to a zachar while she was a zava gidola. And therefore, she first needs to get rid of her Yimei Tumah for Zachar, and afterwards her Yimei Ziva, she needs Shiva Nikiim. And we know during the first 3 weeks that she's in front of us, she has no sightings. So anywhere during that second week could have been the possibility that she's a Zava Gdola, and therefore she goes to the mikveh every day during that second week. In the third week, she does the same thing. She goes to the mikveh every day during the day because of the possibility she was Yoledet Nekeva Bizov. She gave birth to Nekeva Bezov, so that the first 14 days would be Bitumah. Then she'd have the Shiva Nikiim. Those Shiva Nikiim could terminate anywhere during that third week. Therefore, she goes to the mikveh every day during the third week. So that leaves you, so far, going to the mikveh 7 times on the first week, 14 times in the second week, which is 21, and then 7 times again in the third week, which is 28. We're going to see in a second that Beit Hillel also subscribes to those 28 times of going to the mikveh. In addition to that, Beit Shammai then has the possibility from the beginning of the third week all the way till the 80th day, the possibility that that is the end of the 40 days and later on the 80 days of her having an nekeva. If she had an nekeva the moment before she came before us, 80 days later she needs to go to the mikveh the night after the 80th day because of the possibility that that was the termination of her 80 days. And then she needs to go to the mikveh because Beit Shammai believes you go to the mikveh. Now, for every day prior to coming before us, if she had a nekeva, then it would have the same effect, which is that the night afterwards you would need to go to the mikveh. So if she came a day before she came before she had a nekeva, then on the 79th day that she came before, she needs to go to the mikveh on the night before. If she had the nekeva 2 days before she came before us, then on the 78th day at night she needs to go to the mikveh. That'll run all the way back to the possibility that it happened during the third week that she's in front of us. And so therefore, she goes to the mikveh every single night from the third week and onward, according to Beit Shammai. So if you add that all together, you end up with 94 tefillot. The last tefillah, which is the 95th tefillah, is on that first day when she comes ben hashmashot before us because of that safek of ben hashmashot, or because she now has the first night in front of us, we have her go to the mikveh that first night, which adds on the 95th tefillah. That's just a quick summary of what we saw in Beit Shammai yesterday. Only because the Gemara is going to ask questions about it, so I just want to make sure we're once again fresh on that shita of Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel damrei tefillat yom arokh lo bayit tefillah. What about Beit Hillel, who doesn't agree with Beit Shammai? They agree that at the end of your May Tumah, the 7 days of Tumah, you go to the mikveh and you become a tefillat yom arokh. Or at the end of the 14 days of Nekevah, you go to the mikveh and you become a tefillat yom arokh. But they don't agree with Beit Shammai, then at the end, the tail end, after the Harav Shemesh on day 40, or on day 80, that you have to go to the mikveh again. So they can eliminate a lot of the tefillot that Beit Shammai required. Lamed hei mavitayu. What are the 35 tefillot that Beit Hillel requires? Esrim v'tam yo tidamran. 28 we already noted, which are the same 28 that we started with for Beit Shammai, also are there or valid for Beit Hillel. That is in the first week that she comes before us. She goes every day at night because she might be the end of her 7 days of Tumah for Zachar. In the second week that she's in front of us, she goes every day at night because that might be the termination or the end of the 14 days of Tumah for Nekeva. During the day, during the second week, she goes every day because that might be Yoledet Zachar Bezov. So the first week, she terminated her 7 days of Tumah. The second week, she's ending her 7 Nikiim, or Shiva Nikiim. There she goes to the mikveh every day. In the third week, she also goes to the mikveh every day during the day because maybe she was Yoledet Nekeva Bezov. Give birth to a nekeva, 14 days of Tumah, then you have Shiva Nikim. So the Shiva Nikim could end anywhere during that third week. So that is how we get to the 28 base tefillot. Hachshua hey, and then in the fifth week, Matbilana Kolelia Balelia. We have her go to the mikveh every night. Imar Sof Nidahi, because maybe that's the end of her Nidah. That is because, if you remember the structure of this woman's experience, she comes before us, she has no idea what happened, no idea why she's no longer pregnant or how she's no longer pregnant. And we're trying to work out with her the best way to deal with the situation. The structure of what happened is that for the first 3 weeks she's in front of us, she has no sighting. She's completely Tohora. Then from the start of the fourth week, for the subsequent 10 weeks, every other week she is, the first week sees Dam every day during the week. Second week she does not see Dam at all during that week. And then alternating weeks, one week of Tumah, 1 week of Tara, for then the subsequent 10 weeks. So here, when we reach the fourth week after she came in front of us, she has sightings all those days during the week. So now, during that period of time, if it was a Yoledet Zachar, Yoledet Nekeva, and she was past her days of Tumah, and she's past her days of Zov, that Damim would have no impact whatsoever, because it would be Yemei Tara of a Zachar, Yemei Tara of a Nekeva. So they'd be irrelevant in terms of her Tumah. The only possibility of where they have relevance is if she either terminated the 40 days of the 80 days of her Zachar or Nekeva before that fourth week came about. So now she's outside her Yemei Tahara. Or the possibility that according to those that don't subscribe to Rabbi Shimon Levi, that she didn't give birth to a leida that was a zachar nekeva, but possibly that it was not a leida at all, it was a nida. But going with the Rabbi Shimon Levi's version, so then any one of the 40 or 80 days could have terminated during that fourth week, and that means that when she sees dam during that fourth week, it's petach lenida. She's starting as a nida. She's finished to yemei toar of a zachar at 40 days, or at 80 days for nekeva. That 40th or 80th day could be in any one of the 7 days during that week. If that did happen, then the subsequent day, she becomes a nida. And then she needs 7 days before she can come to Ora. So then, in the subsequent week, the first day of the fifth week would have been the 7th day after she became possibly a petach nida. That means, starting on day 28, which is the end of the fourth week that she's in front of us, that night, after the 28th, which is the beginning of the 29th, she needs to start going to the mikveh, because maybe she came a nida at the beginning of week number 4, and now she's passed her 7 days of nida, and it's the end of her 7 days of nida, she goes to the mikveh. She goes to the mikveh that night, then she goes in the next night, the next night, the next night, until the possibility, which is the last possibility, is that on the 27th day was the end of her 40 days, or 80 days, and on the 28th day, when she had her last sighting of the fourth week, that was a petach l'nida. So then for the subsequent 6 days, she is in nida. And then she would go to the mikveh finally on the night after the 34th day. And that's actually what the Braita says, that going on Or, the Lamed Hay, on the night of the 35th day, that's when she can be together with her husband, because then she's cleared all the possible different permutations of Tumah that she needs to be Nitaheret from. So that's how Beit Hillel adds on an additional 7 on top of the 28 to get to the 35. Those are the Tfilot Nidah that she does at night, starting from the night after the 28th, all the way until the night after the 34th, because any one of those days could be the end of her 7 days of Nida. Now given that, you now have 35 for Beit Hillel, and 95 for Beit Shammai. Now the Gemara is going to begin to ask, aren't there more Tfilot that we could have had here? And also, why do you need the structure of 3 weeks when she's Torah, and then 10 weeks when she's alternating Tamei, Tahor, Tamei, Tahor? That the Gemara says, Yud Shvuim Lomali. Why do you need 10 weeks after the first 3 weeks when she is Torah? Why do you need an additional 10 weeks? It's enough with 8.5. That's because the maximum amount of time where we could have a problem is 80 days. When she showed up before us, and possibly she gave birth to a Likeva right before she showed up before us, the maximum amount of time where any of this is relevant is for the 80 days after the time that she came before us. 80 days divided by 7 would be 11.5 weeks. It would be 11 weeks and 3 days. What we structured in the Braita is you have 3 weeks of Tara, and then 10 weeks of alternating Tamei Tahor, Tamei Tahor. That's a total of 13 weeks. Or, if you subtract the first 3 weeks, is the difference between what we have in the Braita, which is 13 minus 3 is 10 weeks, and versus what you need, which is 11.5 weeks minus 3, which is 8.5. So that's what the Gemara is asking over here. Why do you need to go to 10 weeks afterwards? 8.5 would be enough to come up with all these scenarios. It says, I did the Tana Pago de Shvua, basically. The half week, it started the week, so it finished off the week. You're not going to just stop in the middle of a week. It gave you 8.5 weeks afterwards, so just finish that, you get a full 9 weeks. Okay, that's 9 weeks. What do you need a 10th week for? I did the Tana Shvua Tamei, Tana Nami Shvua Tahor. It was alternating between a week Tamei, a week Tahor, a week Tamei, a week Tahor. It kept the pattern intact. So it said 10 weeks of on and off, Tamei, Tahor, Tamei, Tahor. So it added that last week of Tahara, even though it wasn't necessary for the case in order to explain the case. Nevertheless, just to keep the pattern intact and to have a parallel structure throughout all the weeks, it just added in that 10th week of Tahora. It says, Vaha Ika Tfilat Zava. What about the fact that according to Beit Hillel, over here, Beit Hillel only required 35 times that she went to the mikveh. The problem is that after the fifth week, where we said she went to the mikveh for Nida, then starting in week number 6, she has the sighting all week. And then the same in week 8, week 10, and week 12, she's going to have sighting. So after week number 4, where she had those sightings, and we were choshesh the Nida, starting with week number 6, we should already now be choshesh for what's called a zava gedola. It's a possibility that she was in nida during that week number 4. That means that week number 6 is during her yemei ziva. If she has sightings all week, there's a possibility that she had 3 days in a row where she was possibly a zava gidola, and then if she has to keep shiva nikiim at the end of the seventh week, on the last day of the seventh week, when she has no sightings that week, she should go to the mikveh, because that is the end of her shiva nikiim. And the same would be true with week number 8, where it's a possibility she became a zava gidola. Then on week number 9, on the last day, she should go to the mikveh because she's a zava gidola, and that's her shiva nikiim. And similarly, with week number 10, if she has sightings all week, she could be a zava gdola. And then at the end of week number 11, she should go to the mikveh. So why is it that she doesn't go to the mikveh? And at those times, according to Beit Hillel, and that would add on an additional 3 times that she goes to the mikveh. And the possibility is that if you really count through the last week, where, again, the Gemara said it was unnecessary to have it, you'd even have to have another time to go to the mikveh, where the Ramban suggests that even though there are possibilities of going to the mikveh after the 80th day, that the Braita is not interested in. So that you can't ask a question for. But within those 80 days, there's still a number of times where you'd have to go to the mikveh for being a zavag dola and getting through your shiva nikiim. So my answer is, lifnei tashmish kachashiv, lachar tashmish lo kachashiv. Those things that were before the 35th day when she's muteret to her husband, that the Beit Hillel counted. Those that are after that 35th day, they did not count. Now, Beit Shammai already has counting of tefillot after that day because they count every night afterwards because they require the extra tefillot. So that's what Gemara says. Well, Beit Shammai, the chashiv, the lachar tashmish. What about Beit Shammai, who does count the days after that 35th day when she's mutar to her husband? Nechshav nami tefillat zavah. So why don't we mention the fact that there are an additional 3 tefillot for a zavah gdola according to Beit Shammai? That should have been in that 95, it would be 98. Leida kamairi, b'ziva lo kamairi. We're dealing with mikvaot and tumah that comes from leida. We're not dealing with tumah and going to the mikvah that deal with zav. Vayika yoledet b'zov. Wait, part of the safek was up front. The reason you have to go to the mikvah so many times in the first 3 weeks was because of the possibility that she was a leidet zachar b'zov or yoledet nekeva b'zov. Where it says, no. Yoledet b'zov kachoshi. If there was a birth that also included her being a zavag dola, then it does count. Ziva greta lo kachoshim. Stand alone, zavag dola, that it didn't count. So the shivanikim that are associated with the leida bizov, that they counted the mikvah for. But just the standalone problems of zavag dola later on, that they didn't deal with. Now Rashi earlier asks a question which the Gemara does not address, and that is, the Gemara here says, oh, what about the fact that at the end of every other week, starting with the seventh week, then she has shiva nikiim, and she maybe was a zavag dola, and she should go to the mikveh. That same safek could also be precipitated by the fact she's a nida. Why isn't the possibility that in the sixth week, right before the sixth week, during the fifth week, she finished her 40 days of a zachar, 80 days of a nekeva, and that means that the sightings that she has during the sixth week are now sightings of nida. And that would be true on the 8th week and the 10th week as well. If she finished up her 80th day in the previous week, then that new week was a petach lenida. And there's a possibility that every week after the 5th week, that she also was possibly a nida. Why doesn't she have to go to the mikveh at night for the 7 days afterwards? So Rashi says, well, the Gemara gave the answer by why she doesn't go to the mikveh for zavag dola because of the shiva nikiim is because the Beit Hillel doesn't count the days after she already was muteret to her husband on that night of the 35th. So Rashi says, you know what? The Gemara could have given the same answer. The question of why she doesn't have to go to mikveh because she's a nida is the same answer, which is that that is all post-35th day. Since it's post the 35th day, we didn't count any of the going to the mikveh at that point in time, not for zavag dola, not for the shiva nikiim, and not for nida. That's what Rashi says. The truth is that the Tosafot brings from the Rabbeinu Hananel that his girsa in our Gemara was that that was the question of the Gemara. The question of the Gemara was not whether she went to the mikvah for the 7th day of her shiva nikiim, those 3 more times. The question of the Gemara is actually, why does she have to go to the mikvah for 7 days after every week? Because she could have been a nida any one of those days, or petach l'nida in any one of those days. And so the Rabbeinu Hananel actually says it was the question of the Gemara. And the answer of the Gemara was, lifnei tashmish, we counted. Achar tashmish, we don't count. So what Rashi says is implied in the Gemara. The Rabbeinu Hananel, according to the Tosafot, has that question in the Gemara itself. For Beit Shammai, it won't be an issue because Beit Shammai has her going to the mikveh every night anyway, because it's possibly the last day of her 40 days or 80 days. So she's going to the mikveh anyway for that, so she catches the nida anyway. So according to Beit Shammai, it wouldn't be an issue because she is going to the mikvah for those nights that could have possibly been the end or the termination of her nida. So now, the Gemara asks about the first week that she is in front of us. That first week that she's in front of us, the dlavei biyoma, she should go to the mikveh every day during the first week she's in front of us. Maybe any one of those days at the end of her shivinikim. We have no idea what happened before she came before us. Possibly she saw a sighting that made her into a zavak dola 6 days before she came before us. And then she now has shivinikim that end on the first day that she's in front of us. Or it happened 5 days or 4 days or 3 days before she came before us. And then the shivinikim end during the first week. So she should go to the mikveh every day during the first week. We already noted this in yesterday's daf, that this is Hamani Rabbi Akiva. This braita is following the position of Rabbi Akiva, Damar Binat Svurim Bifanenu, that you need to have Shivinikim counted in front of us. Shivinikim only count when you count. You can't have Shivinikim just because you were Naki. Just because you had no sightings of Dam does not make you into Shivinikim. Shivinikim are a process which requires Kavanah, which is at the beginning of the process you start the count by doing a Bdika. At the end of the process, you do a bdika. You're supposed to do a bdika every day in between, but at minimum, you need a bdika at the beginning, at the end of the shivinikim, to establish the fact that these are the shivinikim. If you don't do that, then these aren't shivinikim. And so even though, yes, she might have had 7 days where she didn't see any sightings, that doesn't make it into shivinikim. Shivinikim require conscious counting of the shivinikim, and that can only start when she comes in front of us, because she had no clue as to what happened any time before she came before us. That's why we don't have her go to the mikveh during the first week that she came in front of us. Now, the Gemara says, Sof Shavua Kama Litavlo. What about at the end of the first week, she should go to the mikveh on the seventh day that she's in front of us? Because that could be the seventh day of her Shivinikim, and now she counted 7 days where she's in front of us. Gemara says, Chad B'Shavua Lo Kamayri. You're right, she needs to go to the mikveh on the day of the seventh day of the first week. But that's one tefillah in the whole week. That Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, when they were counting, they didn't deal with that type of tefillah, because when the whole week you need to go to the mikveh, for 7 days you need to go to the mikveh, that's what they dealt with. Over here, where it's one day at the end of the first week, they didn't mention it. But in Hokanami, she does need to go to the mikveh on the seventh day during the day. Where it says, what about Yom HaKama Da'atya L'Kaman? What about the first day that she shows up in front of us? L'Tavlo, she should go to the mikveh, because it's a possibility that she should merit Yom Keneged Yom. Pasveri, she was in her Yemei Ziva, and she had a sighting of Dam the day before she came before us. Well, that means that the subsequent day after she has the sighting of Dam, she's Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, she goes to the mikveh, and then she would be Torah on that night. So she should go to the mikveh on the first day she came before us. Or, it could be that she had a sighting for 2 days before she came before us, and that made her into Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, and then she should have to go to the mikveh on that first day that she came before us. Dilma, Shomeret Yom Keneged Yomi, because maybe she is a Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. My answer is, B'zavak Dola Kamari, B'zavak Tana Lo Kamari. The Sugya, or the Braita, is only dealing with a Zavak Dola, which needs Shivinikim. The case of Zavak Tana, it's not dealing with that issue, but in Okanami, that issue would raise the possibility of the specter that she would have to go to the mikveh maybe on the first day she's in front of us, and maybe even the second day that she's in front of us, because we said that she showed up in front of us, Benesh Mashot. That means if she had a sighting right at Benesh Mashot, if it turns out that Benesh Mashot is really nighttime, that means she has a sighting on the first day that she's in front of us, then she becomes a Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom on the second day. So for Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, she might have to go to the mikveh on the first day and the second day, but our bright is not dealing with that because it's only dealing with a Zavah Gdola, not with a Zavah Tana. That's how it rids itself of that problem. Even though it should have been counted, it's not counted. The Tosafot asks over here, why does the Gemara, when it's answering about Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, why doesn't it give the answer it gave for the previous case, which is that at the end of the week, we ask, why does she go to the mikveh for Shivinikim on the seventh day? Gemara answered, we don't do one time during the week. So why doesn't the Gemara answer the same thing by Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom? We say, oh, she should go to the mikveh on the first day that she's in front of us, because maybe she's Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, and the rest of the week she wouldn't go to the mikveh. Isn't that the same thing that you just asked before, and you said, we don't, any Myri, we're not dealing with a case where it's one day in the week you have to go to the mikveh. The Tosafot says, well, maybe it wouldn't be one day anymore. Because if you have the Shivinikim and you have to go on the seventh day during the day, and on the first day you'd have to go to the mikveh because of Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, all of a sudden it's not just one time going to the mikveh during that first week. It's twice now. It's on the first day and the last day. Or maybe even the first 2 days and the last day. So that answer is no longer relevant to say, oh, Pam Shavua, we didn't mention. Because that would be more than Pam Shavua. So the Gemara had to come to a different answer, which is that we're not dealing with Zava Ktana, we're only dealing with Zava Gdola, and only a Zava Gdola in the context of Leida, not a Zava Gdola standalone. Now Rashi raises another issue, which is, what about the fact that according to Beit Shammai, the rate they got to 95 to be loaded was that they required it to be la on the first night that she showed up in front of us, because she showed up in Ben Hashmashot. And so for Beit Shammai, there were actually 29 to be loaded in that first series, and then the additional 66 that came afterwards, that added up to the 95. Why does Beit Hillel only have 28 in the beginning? What happened to that extra one, Ben Hashmashot? Why don't we count that for Beit Hillel? So Rashi claims it's because it's tefillah achat b'shavua. It's one tefillah in that first week, and we're not going to count that one tefillah in the first week. Bali Tosafot say, what do you mean? They counted it for Beit Shammai, and nobody said, oh, it's tefillah achat b'shavua. Why for Beit Hillel should be counted as tefillah achat b'shavua? So Rashi deals with it by simply saying that it was tefillah achat b'shavua. Tosafot's bothered by that because we counted it for Beit Shammai. Why won't you count it for Beit Hillel? So Tosafot quotes from Tshuvat Rashi, which is interesting. They had a different version of what the answer of Rashi was. He says, "V'nirish appears Rashi b'tshuvato." That the answer is the Beit Hillel chashiv tefillah deleil tchilat shvua gimel. That Beit Hillel does not count the tefillah on the first night of the third week. The came into two lo matbilin hanida, because after that point in time for Beit Hillel, you no longer go to the mikveh at night. For them, at the mikveh going to the night ends after the second week. That is at the end of the 14 days. The night after the 14 days, that's the last time you go to the mikveh at night, according to Beit Hillel, until you get to the fifth week, which is the Safek Nida. That night is really the beginning of the third week. The night after the 14th day, which is the end of the 2 weeks, is really the beginning of the third week. So what Tosafot says there, that's one tefillah in a week where the rest of the week you're not going to the mikveh. And so because of that, he thinks it's not the first night that Beit Hillel left out. It's actually the last night that Beit Hillel left out. In the first night when she came to Shmashot, in Ochanani, Beit Hillel says you go to the mikveh then. Ah, so then she has 29, not 28. The answer is that the last night she goes to the mikveh, the night after the 14th, you don't count that because that's the beginning of the third week, and she won't go to the mikveh the remaining nights of that third week. For Beit Shammai, where she continues to go to the mikveh for all those nights and the third week, he counted that because it's not one in a week, it's the whole week she goes to the mikveh. That's how the Balei Tosafot answered that question, bringing Tshuvot Rashi to say why it is that Beit Shammai has 29 and Beit Hillel only has 28 tefillot in those first 3 weeks. So now the Gemara says, Shmami not Talat. From here you would have three conclusions from this Braita. Tosafot adds on, there's actually a fourth thing that would be Shmami not here, which is that the Meituma of Leida don't count towards your Shivanikim, even if you have no sighting of Dam. That is because we said you'll let it dissolve. She has to wait until the second week or the third week to go to the mikveh for her Shivanikim. She needs to finish her Yemeituma for Zachar or Yemeituma for Nekeva. So what you learn from this is that your Yemeituma cannot count towards your Shivanikim. Even though you have no sighting of Dam during that whole week, you're still Tumeah. And that Tuma prevents you from counting the Shivanikim. The Tosafot says that the Gemara could have brought that as another Shmamina, but it was Pshita. It's pretty obvious, or it's pretty clear, and therefore the Gemara didn't bring it, but that is a fourth Shmamina. The other three Shmaminot are Shmamina, Rabbi Kivahi, the bright is Rabbi Kiva, as we just noted, Damar Bin and Svurim Bifanenu. You only count Shivanikim when you count Shivanikim. Just because you showed up and didn't have a sighting for 7 days doesn't make it into Shivanikim. Shmamina, Rabbi Shimoni. As we noted in yesterday's daf, that it has to be Rabbi Shimon is the position in here. Damar, aval amru chachamim asur lasot kein shemadol lidei safek. We mentioned it in the introduction today as well. She can't be together with her husband after she goes to the mikveh on the seventh day of her shivanikim, even though she's muteret because of mikseh deyom kulo. Nevertheless, we don't do it because of the risk that she has a sighting between the time she goes to the mikveh and Harev Shemesh, which would undermine her shivanikim. Because of that risk, we don't allow her to be together with her husband, because Shema Yadol Be Safek, she might end up in a problematic situation. Ushmamina, and from here you also see, Tbilah Bizmana Mitzvah. Going to the mikveh on time is a mitzvah. Because otherwise, why would you have to go to the mikveh 35 times for Beit Hillel, or 95 times for Beit Shammai? Although, we have a dissenting opinion in the Braita, and that is Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Dayal Tbilah Bachrona. It's enough to go once at the end. At the way end, you just go once and you cover everything. He clearly believes that tefillah bizmana is not a mitzvah, and therefore he says, do one tefillah and it'll cover everything. You don't need to go each time to the mikveh because there's no din of tefillah bizmana mitzvah. Tosafot says, the Rabbeinu Chananel paskins like our Gemara, because it says Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai say that tefillah bizmana is a mitzvah. Tosafot says, I don't think that is correct, because it's pshita that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, who disagrees here, will say that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai don't believe that. He has a different version of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and he would think that they think tefillah bizmana is a lav mitzvah. He's not arguing on them, he's saying that whoever quoted them incorrectly. And therefore, the Bali Tosfot say, I don't think tefillah bizmana is mitzvah, and my biggest evidence is, ma'asim b'chol yom. Every day our women go to the mikveh, and it has nothing to do with tefillah bizmana mitzvah. That is because our women are chosheshet for the possibility that they are a zavah gdola, and therefore they wait shivanikiim in order to clear the problem of zavah gdola, and in doing so, they definitely don't go to the mikveh on time. Because there's a high likelihood that they're just a nidah, and not a zavag dolah. They don't even have to wait shivanikim. After 7 days of tumah, they go to mikvah on the night after the seventh day. That would have been tefillah bizmana mitzvah. So she'd have to go to mikvah then, and then for every subsequent night, possibly, until she clears the shivanikim. The fact that she only goes to the mikvah once is evidence of the fact that our women are not doing tefillah bizmana mitzvah. And therefore the Bali Tosfot would say that they think that the psak halacha is that tefillah bizmana is not a mitzvah, and we paskin like Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda over here, not like Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. He even brings from a Rabbeinu Eliyahu who put together a piyut that mentions the fact that tefillah bizmana mitzvah, and Tosafot says over here, don't rely on that, because he has other things in there that are not the halacha. Even though the piyutim, in their day, they ascribed a lot of weight to them because they were written by Talmidei Chachamim, and those Talmidei Chachamim put in Piskei Halacha, or things that were agadic explanations, and therefore they were giving interpretation through their piyutim, and therefore the Bali Tosafot ascribe a lot of weight to the piyutim. They happen to know that Rabbeinu Eliyahu and his piyut also has something else that's not the halacha, and therefore you can't use his piyut as being something that's normative that shows us that that is the halacha, even though he mentions in it that tefillah bizmana seems to be a mitzvah. And now the next Mishnah, Hamapelet Yom Mem, a woman who miscarries on the 40th day. Rashi says she knows it's the 40th day because she counted from the time that she went to the mikveh to the time that she was together with her husband. So she knows that the maximum amount of time that she's pregnant from the time she went to the mikveh until the time she miscarried was 40 days. Therefore, eino chosheshet levlad. You don't have to worry about a vlad because within the first 40 days after conception, the fetus is not classified as a vlad for leida. Yom em aleph. On the other hand, if she already hits the 41st day after conception, that does not guarantee that at the 41st day you have a leida that is of something that is classified like a vlad and would be a leida. It just means now that you can't assume that it's not a leida. From the 41st day and onward, you have to assume that whatever was miscarried could be a zakhar, could be a nikeva, or could be nida, could be nothing. It could be any one of those things. It's not a guarantee that once you cross over day 41 that you have that. But it is clear that you now have a safek on your hands, and you have to be zachar nekeva nida, which means that you only get yumei tumah, you get no yumei tohar. You get 14 days of yumei tumah from the nekeva side. You get no yumei tohar because of the possibility that she was a nida. Exactly what we discussed in the previous Mishnah. And the Gemara asks, what is the Zachar doing here? Like we noted in the previous Mishnah, the Zachar is not adding any information here in terms of her Safek. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yom Em Aleph Teshev LeZachar. If it's the 41st day after conception, then she only has the Safek of Zachar and Nida. It's only a possibility of a male or a Nida. Yom Pe Aleph, after the 81st day, Teshev LeZachar Nekevah Nida. Then, only then does the Safek of Nekevah enter into the picture. Once she hits the 81st day, Shazachar, Nigmar Lemem Aleph, that he says is because the vlad comes to a point in its gestation after the 41st day where it's classified as a vlad after 41 days, Nekeva Lepay Aleph. With the Nekeva, it takes 81 days for that to happen. He thinks there's a difference in the formation of the fetus of a male or a female, and the female takes longer. Irrespective of gender, they both are formed, or they become a fetus, a formed fetus, at the 41st day. So it's irrelevant whether it's a zachar or nekeva. It is 41 days, and at that point you already have a safek, zachar, nekeva, or nida. Any one of those is possible. Now, as far as 40 days, this has significance with regards to abortions, which we'll deal with later on in the Masechta on Daf Mem Dalet, so there we'll speak about it more in depth. I'm just going to note it here because it does have some significance in the fact that it seems from here that a nefel before in the first 40 days would not be classified as a vlad, would not be classified as a fetus or a living being. If that's the case, then aborting during that period of time would seem to be okay. Now, that is offset or mitigated by a Balei HaTosafot. It's found in Chulin. It's also found in Sanhedrin. With regards to the restriction of aborting, the Bnei Noach have one of the Shiva Mitzvah Bnei Noach is Shofech Dam HaAdam Ba'Adam. That one who kills something that is Ba'Adam inside of another human being, that they are subject to the death penalty for. That is that a Ben Noach is subject to the death penalty for aborting a fetus. And the truth is that there is no such restriction that's found amongst the mitzvot that Bnei Yisrael have. The Balei HaTosafot invoke a principle that the Gemara in Sanhedrin has, which is it can't be that a Ben Yisrael is more mekil than a Ben Noach. That means if it's osur for a Ben Noach, it has to be osur for a Ben Yisrael. That doesn't mean that you have to have the same punishment. For instance, by Gneva or Gzela, which are one of the Shiva mitzvot Bnei Noach, that is subject to a death penalty for Ben Noach. By a Jew, there is an Isur of Gneva or Gzela, but there is no death penalty. But the fact is that a Jew has the same restriction as the non-Jew with regards to that matter. And the Gemara invokes that principle by other matters as well, where a Ben Noach is restricted, it has to be that a Jew is restricted, but it doesn't mean that they have to have the same punishment. And Tosafot then invokes that principle with regards to abortion, which is that if a Ben Noach is restricted because of Shofech Dam Adam Ba'Adam, then a Yisrael must be restricted in that manner. And so the Balei HaTosafot say that a Ben Yisrael is restricted in aborting because of that Misur that applies to a Ben Noach. He doesn't say, and it seems clear from the Balei HaTosafot, that there is no din of Ritzicha. It's not called Ritzicha for a Jew, but it would be considered a sur for a Jew to do. So that is the source for this fact that aborting would be problematic. Now, according to that, aborting would only be problematic when it's Shavech Dam HaAdam VaAdam. It has to be an Adam inside of an Adam. Well, the Gemara here seems to say that it's only an Adam once you cross over the threshold of 41 days. And so before that point in time, it wouldn't be an Adam, and there should be no restriction. Despite that fact, Moshe Feinstein brings from a Gemara that's found in Masechet Shabbat that one is allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat even for a vlad, even for a fetus that is under 41 days. From that, Rav Moshe wants to prove that the Gemara views an entity before 41 days as a vlad or as a being that is worth being Mechalel Shabbat for. If that's the case, that makes it into an entity that is also considered a vlad or problematic in terms of abortion. Rav Moshe Feinstein brings that correlation, and even though the Balei HaTosafot in a number of places undermine that correlation, there seems to be a problem by correlating them, because then you get to a halacha that is inconsistent with regards to the normative practices that we have regarding Shabbat versus that what we do with fetuses. And therefore, the Balei HaTosafot actually separate between the two issues and say just because something that you're allowed to do before Hilchul Shabbat doesn't automatically mean that the entity is considered a fetus or a live being. So Tosafot separates between the issues. And Rav Moshe acknowledges that, but despite that fact, he thinks that it is still correlated. And because of that correlation, he restricts aborting even before the 41st day. Although there are definitely poskim that are more makiel in the early parts of conception because of what the Gemara is saying over here. And again, we'll deal with that on Daf Mem Dalet when we get there in Masechet Nidah. All right, so Gemara says, Lama huskar zachar. We already asked this in the previous Mishnah. We're asking this Mishnah. What does zachar have to do with the safek over here? Between the Keva and Nida, you have everything you need in terms of what's going to happen. 14 days of Tumah because of the possibility it was a Keva, and no days of Tohar because maybe it was a Nida. What does Zachar add for over here? Either made Tumah, if it's for the days of Tumah, Haktani Nekeva. You already covered that with the 14 days of Nekeva. If it's for the days of Tolar that you don't have, then Haktani Nida. You already covered that with Nida. So then what do you need for Zakar for? So the answer to this question is, She'im Tireh Yom Lamed Dalet. She has a sighting on the 34th day. V'tach Zor V'tireh Yom Mem V'achad. And then she has a sighting again on the 41st day. Tehei Mikul Kelet. She'll have a problem Ad Mem Chet. Until the 48th day. And the same is true by Nekeva, and I'll explain all this in a minute. If she sees on the 74th day, and then she sees again on the 81st day, she'll be problematic until the 88th day. Now, what is happening here is that structurally, we're choshesh for all three scenarios. The scenario that she had a Nekeva, scenario she had a Zachar, scenario that she is a Nida. So in each of those cases, we're going to go to Chumrah and assume that it turns out to be to your detriment. Which means that you're going to have 14 days of Tumah, and you're going to have no day made Tohar. So that is the most Chumrah that you could get, most the biggest Chumrah you could have, is you get the maximum amount of days of Tumah, and no days of Tahara. But it turns out that in the interim, there are scenarios where that will turn out to be the Kula. For instance, in a case where you have a sighting on day number 34, according to this, you have no Yumei Tohar, and since you have no Yumei Tohar, then you would become a Nida on that day. Since you become a Nida on that day, then when you have a sighting on day Mem Aleph, on the 41st day, that's the 8th day after you had a sighting of Nida. And the 8th day that you have a sighting of Nida is your Yumei Ziva, you become a Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom. So in this scenario where we're doing the Chumrah, it turns out if you have a sighting on day 34, you became a Nida. Then if you have a sighting on day Mem Aleph, you would now be a Zava, Ktana, Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, and if you just wait the next day, you'd be done with your Tahara. But if we say that you were Yoledet Zachar, that you gave birth to a Zachar, that means that the 34th day sighting was during the May Tahara for a Zachar. You have 7 days of Tumah, 33 days of Tahara, then within that first 40 days, you have a sighting. But that sighting was Tahor because it was during your Yemei Tohar for a Zachar. Well, if that day was a Yemei Tohar, when you see on day number 41, that's Tchilat Nida. It's not a Zavak Tana anymore. That's the first sighting you're having for a Nida and your Tmeah for 7 days. That's what the Gemara says. If we're Choshesh for a Zachar over here, then that sighting on day 41, instead of making you only Tmeah for 1 day, it makes you Tmeah for 7 days. And so therefore, the Zachar is impactful when we look at it, the Chumrah. And that makes that the 41st day. Now, she won't become Torah until after she sits on the 41st day. She'll have to wait an additional 6 days. And she won't become Torah until the night after day number 47. So that's why it says she'll be Mekukelet until the 48th day. Same is true by Nekeva. If she has a sighting on day number 74, then we would assume, based on our Chumrah, that she's a Nida. Then when she has a sighting again on day number 81, she's once again a Zavak Tana, because that's her 8th day after having been a Nidah, she made Ziva, she'd have to be Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. On the other hand, if we assume that she got all her days of Yemei Tahara for Nekeva, that means until day number 80, all her sightings are sightings of Dam Tahor. That means that the sighting on day number 74 actually is not a Nidah, it's actually Dam Tohar. That's the case, then her sighting on day 81 becomes Petach Lenida, and then she would have to keep 7 days of Tumah. So it'll turn out to be the Chumrah to assume that she gets her Yemei Tohar of Nekeva, just like it would be by the 41st day when we did it with the Zachar, so too by the 81st day of the Nekeva. So instead of now having to keep Shemer Yom Keneged Yom, she'll have to actually keep 7 days of Tumah, and she won't be then Torah till the 88th day, because she'll have to be Tmeah until number 87 because of Nida, and she'll only be able to go to Mikvah that night of the 88th. So that actually turns out to be that if we go to Chumrah by giving them the Yemei Tohar, that also has impact. And that's why the Zachar is mentioned in the Mishnah, because there are times where giving her the days of Tahara of Zachar, days of Tahara of Nekeva, will actually turn out to be the Chumrah and not the Kula. This is what Tosafot spoke about when we mentioned it. We also noted it yesterday. We noted it back on Daf Chavav, on the top of Chav Zayin. Tosafot mentions it, that the problem of the fake over here is that you have Trei Kula, the Satria Adodi. That if we were to paskin here with regards to these cases, that it's really a fake, did she have a birth or did she not have a birth? Even if she had a birth, maybe it's a Zachar, maybe it's a Nekeva, she go to Kula. Fake, go to Kula. and give her the best situation, which is that she was yoledet zachar, 7 days of tumah, and she get yimei tohar. The problem is that later on, you're going to want to go sveka the kula the other way and say she was actually had a nekeva, because then it'll turn out that these are all yimei tohar. If she has a sighting on day 34 and day 41, the best scenario for her then is to have her have a yoledet nekeva. Then you'd say sveka the kula that she had a nekeva. That is a contradicting sveka. Because in the beginning, you want her to have a sveka and say she had a zachar to get the least amount of yimei tumah and still get yimei tohar. Now, later on, if she cites on 34 and 41, you're going to say, ah, sveka, she had a nekeva, you don't have to worry about them. That's a sveka the kula that are satria dadad, they contradict each other, and therefore we don't allow it. We allow it the chumrah, which is what we just did. We said, oh, we give her the chumrah of nekeva, chumrah of a nida, and she has no yimei tohar. But if it turns to be to her detriment, we'll say that she had a zachar and she had yimei tohar, and she now has to wait 7 days to her detriment. So we will allow it the chumrah, but by sveik of the kula, we won't allow it if it contradicts. This is exactly the scenario that Tosafot speaking about, where it turned out to be that it's trey, sveik of the kula, the satri adodi, we don't allow such a case. And now Rabbi Shmuel Omer, yomei malach tesheb zachar ul nida. Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, timei v'tiher b'zachar. The Torah says that a zachar has 7 days yimei tumah, 33 days yimei tahara, v'timei v'tiher b'nekeva. And by nekeva it also gives 14 days of tumah, 66 days of tahara, double the number of a zachar. Ma k'shi timei v'tiher b'zachar, yitzirato k'yotzei bo. Just like when it gave you the days of tumah and tahara together, the 40 days in total, that also told you the amount of time of gestation before the zachar becomes a fetus. Of kishitimei v'teher b'nekeva, yitzirata k'yotzeva. So too by the nekeva, in days of tumah tahara, those 80 days, should reflect the amount of time it takes for the fetus to be created in a female. Amr lo, ein lemeidim, yitzirah mitumah. What does one have to do with the other? Tumah is post-leida, and this is about the conception. And one has nothing to do with the other. It might be that there's autocorrelation, which is the same 40 days that it takes for Yitzirat HaVlad is also the same amount of time of Tumah Tahara for the birth of a Zachar, but that's just autocorrelation. That's not because there's any connection between them, and for you to do that, then extrapolate that to Nekeva is improper. It has, one has nothing to do with the other. Amru lo to Rabbi Shmuel, and on top of that, they say to Rabbi Shmuel, Maseh b'Cleopatra Malkat Alexandros. So they had this case with Cleopatra, who was the queen of Alexandria, the queen of Egypt. Alexandria was the Greek capital of Egypt. And this was Cleopatra. She had two shvachot that were deserving of the death penalty for whatever they did. They were on death row. They were going to be put to death. And so they decided to do a science experiment on them since they were going on death row anyway. They may as well use them to get some knowledge. Matz'an v'zezeh the mem aleph. And they found out that they both had fetuses, both male and female, that were developed to be a fetus at day number 41. So the experiment went this way, which is they allowed these two shvachot to be secluded with a man, to cohabitate with a man, and then they isolated them. After 44 days, after they were together with those men, they either put them to death and then checked the fetus, or they simply opened them up and checked where the fetus was up to. And they noticed that one of them was pregnant with a male and one of them was pregnant with a female. And it turns out that they both were developed the same amount. And so that's evidence of what the Chachamim are saying, which is the gestation period to reach the point of being a vlad is 41 days for both males and females. Amar lehem, ani mevei lechem raya min haTorah. I bring you a proof from the Torah. V'atem mevim li raya min haShotim. And you bring me a proof from fools. My raya min haTorah. What was his proof from the Torah? Ilei matimei v'teher b'zachar v'timei v'teher b'nekeva. If it's what we just noted in the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel, hakamri lei ein danim yitzirah mitumah. Chachamim already discarded that because of the fact that you don't bring a proof from Yitzirah to Tumah. The two have nothing to do with each other. They're independent. They're not correlated at all. So he says, no, Amar Kara Teleid. The Torah adds in an extra word, Teleid, in the beginning of Parshat Tazria, when it speaks about a woman who gives birth, it says, V'im Nekeva Teleid. Now that's after I already told you that she might have given birth to a Zachar. So all you have to say was, Im Nekeva Hi. Why does it say im nekeva teleid? So tosif la katuv leida acheret b'nekeva. The Torah gives an extra leida by the nekeva to tell you that there's more time in the gestation of a female than there is in a male to reach that threshold of being a fetus. Ma raya min ashutim? Why does he call the experiment that was done by Cleopatra? Why does Rabbi Shmuel call that a foolish experiment? Eimar nekeva kadim v'iabur arayim yom kamei zachar. Who says that the Shifcha was not already pregnant when she came before us for the experiment? Maybe she was already pregnant 40 days beforehand, and then they began the experiment, and then 40 days later they check. It turns out the female had 80 days, and the male had 40 days. That's why they looked alike. So Rabbanan, that's a pretty good undermining of the experiment that they did. Sama d'nafta ashkinu. They have the women drink a potion of sorts that, according to Rashi, flushes out the shechlat zera, flushes out the semen in the body of the woman. According to the Aruch, it was a forced abortion. It was some sort of drink that they had that precipitated an abortion. And therefore, they cleared the women out before they did the experiment. They made sure that they were not pregnant by giving them this aborting potion. V'Rabbi Shmuel, Ika gufa t'lo mikabel tzama. As we know today, people's bodies react differently to different medications. And so some bodies react to that medication and abort. Some of them don't react that way and they don't abort. So it's not a absolute blind study, foolproof study. And therefore, he casts aspersions on the study. Amar lahem Rabbi Shmuel. So now Rabbi Shmuel, in the counter from another Braita, brings another experiment. Maaseh b'Cleopatra Malkat Yivanit. And Cleopatra was the Greek queen. It's interesting here whether this is the same individual, which probably is, that Cleopatra that they're referencing is the same one, because she was originally a queen of Egypt, and then later in a civil war with her brother ends up surrendering to the Romans and then becomes the wife of this Julius Caesar, subsequent to that with Mark Antony. So there were a whole bunch of stories with regard to this, and Alexandria was a Greek city, so the terminology Greek, Alexandria, they all are maybe being conflated, but it might be speaking about the same Cleopatra. Even though the spelling's different, I'm not sure whether it's the same or different individuals, but it seems to me that it might be the same individual. Exact same scenario. She had other maidservants that were deserving of death, Badgan, and they did an experiment on them. They found that the Zachar would reach the point of a fetus at day 41. When it came out, the payalot. And it came out was on the 81st day. Amrlo, Amy Vin Rayam in a shutim. You don't bring proof from the fools. So now the tables are reversed. So my taima. Why is it that we say that it wasn't a good experiment? It says, Hachne keva ayatra arbayim yom vahadayabe. The woman that had the female only became pregnant 40 days later. The experiment, the duration of the experiment seems to be 80 days. And they stopped the experiment with one of them at the 40th day. And then the other one they stopped at what seemingly was the 80th day. And that proved that the female was at the 80th day was similar to the male at the 40th day. Or the male at the 41st day was similar to the female at the 81st day. Come and say, well, it's possible that she only became pregnant 40 days into the experiment. And so if that's the case, then the female was also only up to 41 days and not 81 days. Rabbi Shmuel says, L'shomer masrinu. They had them cohabitate with men, and then they isolated them afterwards so they couldn't be together with men from that day forward. And then they checked at the 41st day for the male, and sure enough, it was developed to a fetus, and the 81st day by the female, and sure enough, it was developed to the same point as the other one. But there was no chance for her to become pregnant in the interim because she was isolated at a guard. Marianne Rabbanan answer, ain't apitropus le'arayot. There are no guarantees with regards to arayot because Emer Shomer Gufei Bala. Maybe the guard snuck in and spent time with her. Who says the guard's trustworthy with regards to arayot? The Tosafot brings up the possibility. What happens if he's a saris? What happens if he's a eunuch? Or what happens if it was an isha that used a woman to guard her? In that case, you have no suspicions. Tosafot says, no guarantees. People can be paid off. People allow other people to go in. You can't trust people. These experiments can't be absolutely certain. And therefore, they believe that it was not a foolproof experiment. Mar says, wait a minute. V'dilma ikaru lahachti nekevar barbim v'achad ha-mishtakcha kizachar. Who says that had they not opened the woman at day 41 instead of day 81, they wouldn't have found the female at the same gestation stage as where the male was. Amar Abaye b'simenei hon shavin. When they opened up the woman who was carrying the female on day 81, it was at the same point of development as the male at 41. The same exact simanim, things that you would see in the male at 41 were apparent to the female at 81. That shows you that they were at the same place of development, even though it was 40 days later for the Nikeva. That's why Rabbi Shmuel brings it as a proof, because he thinks that it is a good experiment. Now what's interesting about these experiments is that the Gemara never speaks about the ethical or moral side of these experiments, which is that you're using human experimentation. Now it's true that the Chachamim themselves weren't doing it. It's probably Greek or the Egyptian doctors that were doing this in order to understand, but the Gemara is willing to rely on that experimentation for information, which is somewhat questionable because we always have these questions as to whether you can use evidence from situations where the evidence or the information was garnered from immoral means. Like, for instance, the experimentations that were done by the Nazis during the Holocaust, the medical experiments have information about psychology and about other medical issues. Are you allowed to use that information, or is that information ethically or morally usable? And so that's interesting here that the Gemara never addresses that. Could be that that is maybe the meaning behind shotim. You don't bring proof from shotim because you don't allow for experimentation on people to bring that type of evidence, even though that does not seem to be what the Gemara is speaking about. The Gemara seems to be undermining the empirical evidence that's brought by the experimentation. Or in essence, the Gemara might be skeptical because of the fact that you had two experiments that were contradictory. That shows you that one of the experiments was wrong. Once you have that, that casts aspersions on the whole process, and therefore you can't bring any proof or evidence from that. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Chachamim omrim echad b'yad zachar v'echad b'yad nekeva. Gemara says, Chachamim, ainu taina kama. The end of our Mishnah, where the Chachamim say that the gestation to get to being a fetus for male and females are equal to 41 days, they're saying the same thing that the Taina Kama said. So what's the differentiation between them? V'chitim, if you want to say, l'mistama reisha k'rabbanan, it's to make it that the Taina Kama is Stam Mishnah, which is like the Rabbanon. And therefore, Yachid Rabbim, Halacha K'Rabbim, that when you have a machloket between a Yachid, like Rabbi Shmuel, and a Rabbim, the Halacha is K'Rabbim, the Gemara says, Pshita, that's pretty straightforward. So, Madat Tema, what I would have thought was Mistavra Taima de Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel's reasoning makes sense. He has a good Svara for what he's saying. The Messiah Lake, cry, because he has psukim that back him up. Whether it's the psukim of Tuma, whether it's the psukim of Teleid, maybe the locha should be like Rabbi Shmuel, Kamash Malan, that the locha is not like Rabbi Shmuel, and the locha is like the Chachamim. Rashi over here is bothered by the girsa that we have, because the girsa that we have says that the fact that the Tana Kama is not mentioned as the Chachamim is to make it into a Stam Mishnah. And by making it into a Stam Mishnah, then the locha would be like a Stam Mishnah. Rashi says that's problematic because we have a principle that halacha stam mishnah is only true when you have machloket v'achakach stam. You have a machloket and then you bring a stam mishnah. The stam mishnah is indicative of the fact that the halacha is like whatever the stam mishnah is. But if you have it the other way around, we have a stam mishnah and then a machloket, then the halacha is not like the stam mishnah, because by bringing the machloket after the stam, it shows that the halacha is not like the stam mishnah. And over here, that would be the case. If you say that the Tana Kama wasn't mentioned as the Chachamim to make it into a Stam Mishnah, then you have a Stam Mishnah, then you have Rabbi Shmuel, and then you have the Chachamim. That Stam V'achakach Machloket, that is not where we say Halacha Stam Mishnah. So Rashi wants to eliminate from the Gemara over here the Lashon of Mistama to make it into a Stam Mishnah, but rather it means that the Gemara is saying that Rabbi wanted to subvert the authorship of the Tana Kama, because he wanted to make it look like it was a Rabbim. And that's why it says later on, the Chachamim say that, and the Chachamim are the Tana Kama. So it makes it that the Tana Kama is Rabbim by making it into an unauthored position. Gemara says that's Pshita. Anytime Rabbi does that, anytime Rabbi brings a Mishnah without attribution, That's because he wants you to know that it is a dat rabim. And even though maybe it's an individual's opinion, we assume that it's the majority's opinion. Especially if we can't find another Tana, an individual Tana that has that opinion, we're going to assume it's the Chachamim. So even without writing the Chachamim at the end, had you just left it as Tana Kama, we would assume that that was the Rabbim and said the Loch is like that, Neged Rabbi Shma. So why do you have to tell me it's the Chachamim and tell me that it's a plurality? The answer is because the Svara and the Psukim support Rabbi Shma. So in order to upend that, we have to bring the Chachamim in the end to show you, despite the fact that the evidence is in favor of Rabbi Shmuel, we still paskin like the Chachamim and Yachid Rabim, Halacha Kirabim. Right now, the Gemara brings what is a very famous agadata over here with regards to the fetus in utero. Darish Rabbi Simlai. Lamav la domeh v'meimo. What does a fetus look like when it's in utero? Lepinkas shemikupal. It is like a ledger that describes you that is folded over. Munach yadav al shteitz da'av. And his two hands are placed by his temples. Shtei atzilav. According to Tosafot, shtei atzilav means his two elbows. According to Rashi, shtei atzilav means either his shoulders or his underarms. Al bet akubotav are on his knees. Ubet ekavav and his two heels. Al bet akvotav are on his buttocks. Virosho munach lo ben birkav. And his head is between his knees. Or in essence, what they're describing here is the fetal position of a fetus that is in utero. Upiv satum, and the mouth is sealed when it's in utero. Vitiburo patuach, and the umbilical cord is open for the sustenance of the mother to reach the fetus, which is ochel mimashimo ochelet, and he is sustained through what his mother eats. Vishoteh mimashimo shoteh, and gets liquids from that which his mother gives, which is through the umbilical cord, the dam from the mother comes in, and whatever she's eating and is processed by the woman is then passed on. Those nutrients are passed on to the baby through the tiburo, through the stomach, through the umbilical cord. Ve'eno motzirei, the child does not produce waste while he's in utero, shemi arogatimo, because that would kill or poison the mother, because as Rashi notes, the rechem has no exit. And so if there was feces that were building up inside of the uterus, there'd be nowhere for it to go, and it would have ruined, it would poison the baby and the mother in that case. So it must be that the child produces no waste when it's in utero. The truth is that the child does produce waste, but the waste is dealt with the same way that it's dealt with in the human body, which is the blood takes in the nutrients and whatever the baby needs, and also brings out whatever it doesn't need. And then it's processed by the kidneys and the digestive system of the woman, which clears it out. So the waste that's produced by the baby is processed by the mother's body as well. And therefore, there is no waste dispelled by the baby in utero. Kaven shiatza lavir olam. As soon as the baby is born, niftach hasatum, that which was sealed, the mouth, is opened. Venistama patuach, and that which was opened, the umbilical cord, is sealed. Shimalei kein, had it not been for that, person would not survive even for a moment. Over here, the Achronin, the Marsha, many others point out that this has to do with the machloka between the Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim with regards to the Girsa of Asher Yatzar. And that the Sfaradim add into the Asher Yatzar at the end that there would be Iafshar, Amod Fanecha, Afilu Sha'achat. That's the Girsa that the Sfaradim use. The Rama brings, the Maram Rutenberg says, that's not true. You could survive for a shachat, even if you couldn't breathe for a shachat, even if you couldn't eat for a shachat, all those things, if they were shut down for a moment, you could survive. So then it'd be improper to say vafilu shachat, and he advocated taking it out, and that's the way the Ashkenazim paskin, that we don't say vafilu shachat. Despite that, the Tur puts it back in and says, despite the Maram Rutenberg, he thinks that we should say vafilu shachat, and he cites our Gemara as the source for that. Because the Afilu Sha'achat may not be referring to a person when they're alive, but a person at birth, their Afilu Sha'achat, and even a momentary problem with the mouth being sealed and the umbilical cord being open, would lead to the death of the fetus. And that's why we can say Afilu Sha'achat, even though it's not true throughout our lives, it is true at the moment of birth. Mener daluklo al rosho, and there's a candle above his head. Bitzofer mabit misofo olam batzofo. And the fetus can see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. allegorically, the Marsha, the Maral, note over here that the idea of being able to see from one end of the world to the other end of the world is a reference to the neshama. It's a reference to the spiritual side of the individual, which is only entered into the individual at the moment of birth, but before birth, the neshama hovers over the fetus, similar to what happens at the moment of death, which is that the neshama leaves the body at the moment of death, and it hovers over the body at that point in time, which has impact in terms of quota mate and other things that deal with the mate. So too, at the beginning, the neshama hovers over the fetus. It's not internal to the fetus, and therefore has the ability to see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. Shenemar, they bring a pasuk from Yov in Perchavtet. There's a series of psukim we're going to quote now, and we're going to see from those psukim that it's talking about the Yimei Leida. Behilo Nero Ale Roshi, his candle shone above my head, the Oroe Le Choshech, and through his light I could see through the darkness. So that's a reference to the fact that the candle that's being held above the fetus, or the ner, which is equal to nishama, is able to see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. V'ati tama, and don't think that that is crazy or ludicrous. Shari Adam Yashen Kan, person sleeps here, Roe Chalom Basfamya, and has a dream while they're in Spain. Meaning that once a person shuts down the limitations of the physicalness or their physicality, both from the problems of chait, the problems of thought and seichel, and the problems of being just limited because you're a physical entity, when you shut those down, then the neshama can soar and can go to many different places. So just like when a person sleeps, it frees the neshama to wander and to go around, so too when a person's in utero, when the neshama is separate from the body, and it's not limited by the body, plus there's no chait and there's no tum'ah, the neshama is pure there, it has clear visibility from one end of the world to the other end of the world. And there are no better days than those days that the fetus is in utero, Shnemar, because Iyov, after going through all the trials and tribulations that he goes through, he asks Hashem, "Meet Neni ki arche kedem, can you make it back like those old days? Like the days where God looked over me. What are the days in a person's life that are measured by months and not measured by years? That's the gestation in the woman. That's the 9 months of pregnancy. That's when it's called Yarche. And what Eov asked for is to go back to those great days when we counted months and not years. I want to go back to the womb. I want to go back to in utero. This is the same Perek. In Eov, it's the pasuk before, the pasuk we quoted before, and that's how we know that the pasuk before was speaking about in utero, because the pasuk bet that we just quoted was speaking about in utero, and the one before we quoted was pasuk gimel. So that's how we know that the candle and the light was speaking about a baby in utero. Umelamdim oto kol haTorah kula. During that period of time, the fetus learns the entire Torah. Shenemar, vayoreini, Hashem taught me, vayomer li, itmach, devarai, libecha. Your heart should retain that which I'm giving to you. Shmor mitzvotai vechyeh. Keep my commands and you will live. Gomer, and also says, besod eloka, alei ahali. That with the secret of God, it will come up in my tent. My gomer. Why do you have to bring a second proof? The first proof seems pretty good. Because the Gemara says, v'chiteima navi udeka amar. If you want to say, that puzzle that we quoted from Mishlei was the Navi, or the narrator in Mishlei speaking and saying about himself that Hashem says, keep my word, or what which I'm telling you should keep. He's not speaking about a fetus in utero. Then I have the second puzzle. Kasher ha'iti b'mei chorpi, sod eloka alei ohali. The word or the secret of God should be in my tent. And again, that puzzle in Iyob is puzzle dalit. It's the third pasuk after the pasuk that we said it's speaking about in utero. So there again, it's talking about the secret of God. While I'm in utero, I'm being taught the secret of God. Tashma, besod eloka, alai oli. That's what the tashma is, that while I was in utero, Kodesh Baruch Hu taught me everything. When a person exits the body, the malach comes and smacks him or knocks him on the mouth, on the lip, and he forgets everything he learned. Shenemar, the petach hatat rovets. When the baby exits, then that's when the Yetzer HaRa comes in. And the reason the Yetzer Hara enters is because the person's forgotten the Kol HaTorah Kula. That Gemara in other places notes that the Yetzer Hara only enters into the child after the child is born, not when it's in utero. And similarly, we said now before that the neshama that was outside the body is entered into the body at the moment of birth, and that's what gives the person the ability to make choices going forward. Now, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz over here takes note of the fact that when Yov wants to go back to the old days, when things were still good before everything that bad that happened to him, he doesn't just ask to go back to better times, he has to go back to the best of times. That he has to go back to in utero, which Gemara here notes was the best time of his life. From that, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and Sichot Musar points out that when one goes to daven, when one goes to ask from Hashem, he should not just ask for something small, shouldn't ask for just a little this or a little that. He should strive for the best, and he should ask for that which is the pinnacle, and not ask for something that's subpar. And similarly, like Eov, when he was already asking God to go back to better times, he said, let me go back to the best of times, not just the better times. So it has to be an indication of the way that we should beseech God, or when we're searching to do things and to succeed, we should look to succeed in the best way possible, in the highest form possible, and not sell ourselves short or not daven for something that's not the best. The other thing to note over here is, what is the purpose of learning Kol HaTorah Kula and then forgetting it right after you're born? Why is that additive in any way? So there's a famous Gra that speaks about this and says, Eino dome. There's no comparison to a person that is learning something for the first time to something where a person is learning something where they have it in their subconscious, where they had at some point in time, they have a familiarity with it. It's a difference between going and finding an avedo, finding something that you lost, versus trying to find something that you never knew about or you never had any familiarity with. And similarly, if Hashem teaches us Kol HaTorah Kula while we're in utero, then later on, even if we forget it all, when we are learning Torah and we come back to the Torah, it's exactly that. We're returning to the Torah. We're finding an avedo that was lost from us. There, it's much easier. It's much more plausible that the person will attain or retain that what he has now because he finds it familiar. He finds it to be something that speaks to him, something that he has some subconscious connection with because of his previous encounters with it. Versus had it all been something chadash, it would have been much harder for the individual to attain, retain, and connect with the Torah itself. Or that it helps us overcome the impediments of being physical beings and being the Olam HaShafel. The fact that we already have some connection to it allows us to reach those heights of Kedusha with regards to the Torah. That's how the Gra explains the phenomenon here. And the Gemara says, "Eino yotzei misham, the fetus does not leave the mother, ad shemashbin oto, till they make him take a shvua, shenemar, kili tichra kol berech, to me each knee will bow, tishava kol lashon, every language or every speaker will take an oath. Kili tichra kol berech, all knees will bend to me or bow before me. Zeyom amita. That's on the day of death. Shenemar, lifanav yichru'u kol yordei afar. Before him shall bow down all those that go down to the dust. Now the truth is that the Pashtuna Pasuk is saying yordei afar as another way of saying human beings. All human beings will bow before you. But the Gemara is taking it more literally as people who are yordei afar, going into the dirt, those that are being buried. So at the moment of death, everybody bows before Hashem. Tishava kol lashon, that every individual will take an oath to God. Zeh yom haleida, that's the day of birth. Shenemar, niki kapayim, ubar levav, asher lo nasa l'shav nafshi, lo nishba l'mirma. So the people who are yoleh behar Hashem, those that will go up to Hashem, are those who are people who are honest and moral individuals that don't do things improperly or for naught, and lo nishba l'mirma, they don't take oaths unnecessary, or they don't lie under oath when they take a shvua. As Rashi notes over here, what is the big deal about somebody who doesn't take a shvua sheker? That's something we'd expect of you. Why does that make you ra'oi to be yoleh b'har Hashem? We expect from every individual that they don't take shvua that is false, and so therefore that can't be the reason that you're attaining har Hashem. Must be that there's a different shvua that we're speaking about, a more significant shvua that we're speaking about. And the Gemara says that that shvua is the shvua at the time of birth. And mahi ha-shvua, shemashbin oto, what is that shvua that we make him take? Ti tzadik, balti rasha. That you should do the right thing and not the wrong thing. Vafilu kol olam kulo omrim lecha tzadikata, even if the whole world tells you that you're a tzadik, hayeh be'anecha kerasha. You should treat yourself or look at yourself like a rasha so that you know that you're doing the right thing or you're trying to do the right thing. Don't overestimate your being a tzaddik. Now there are many who read over here this as dealing with Gilgul Neshamot, and that's why there's a shvua that is being taken here, because the individual failed to live up to the expectations the previous time. And since there's a Gilgul shvua, they're saying to him, listen, you gotta do it right this time. Take a shvua, you're gonna be a tzaddik, not a rasha. And that's why you have to take another shvua, even though we are mushbaim, v'omdim, mihar sinai, to keep the mitzvot, according to this view that it's a Gilgul, then the person failed to live up to that shvua. They abrogated that shvua in their first iteration, and that's why they have to take a new shvua to reaffirm that they're mushbaim, mihar sinai, according to those that view it as a Gilgul shvua. Number one, and number two is, that's why you should never think of yourself as a tzaddik, because if you're doing good now, doesn't mean that you're not back here because you did something wrong in your last iteration. So there are many people who invoke the idea of Gilgul Shvua. I think even without that, you can understand what is being said here, which is that God puts us in the world for a purpose, and the Shvua that we're taking is that we're going to fulfill that purpose, and we're going to live up to God's expectations of us and not fail to do that. And that's the Shvua, which is we got to do what our mission is to do in this world. God is Tahor, and His servants are Tahor. And the neshama that you have inside of yourself is Torah. If you take care of it and keep it pure and clean, okay. If not, otherwise I'm going to take it back from you. And that is partly what we say in Elokai Neshama every morning, that we have a neshama Torah shenatata bi, and that you magzir it to me, so that we have to maintain it, we have to take care of it, in order that it can stay with us. Tana the Rabbi Shmuel Mashal, a parable for what we're saying here is the Kohen, Shemasar Truma Amaretz. A Kohen who has Truma, and he has another Kohen Amaretz, that he wants him to share in the Truma, or eat the Truma with him, or he gives him Truma. Bamarlo, Imatam Shamra Bitara Mutav. If you keep this Bitara, which is not the normal way of Amaretz, if you take care of it and do what's right, then fine. You can eat or you can share in the truma with me. Imlav, if not, or any so far lefanech, I'm going to burn it up in front of you, meaning that's what happens to truma tmeah, is it's going to be burnt. And I'm going to burn it and you're going to lose any benefit or utility from it because you mistreated it. So same thing with regards to the neshama. Mikra, what is the pasuk that you take a shvua b'yom aleida? Rashi told us why it makes sense that that's the case from the pasuk they quoted before. But we don't necessarily have evidence that that is the time of Leida, not any other time. So my krah, mimei imi ata gozi. It says that from the womb of my mother, you took me out. Goz or gaz means to cut. My mashma dai gozi lishnat ishtabu yehu. How do you know that the word gaz or goz over here means to take a shvua and not the literal meaning, which means to cut me out or take out? Dichtei, because it says in the pasuk Yirmiyahu, gozi nizrach Bashlichi, cut off your crown and throw it away. And then the play on the word is nizrach, which is from the word nezer, which is a crown from nizirut. And that is a neder nizirut. So it says, gozi nizrech bashlichi, that take your neder nizirut or your crown and throw it off. So the word gozi is connected with nizrech or nizirut, which is a neder nizirut. And so just like the gozi over here is a neder, so to me, may me atak gozi. From the womb of my mother, you've made me take a shvua. And the nature of that shvua is be a tzaddik and not be a rasha. All right, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph.